your chance, motherfucker.
Shit.
I'm not singing Roxette again.
Oh, come on.
You only get one joyride tonight. Everyone's just going to have to... Why don't you tell the people what you just heard? Maybe you could sing a little for us. You were a guitarist. You can't do it?
I heard the soothing tones of...
Yeah, that's right. We're recording a podcast. Time to get mellifluous.
Mellifluous tones. Benny's soulful singing voice.
Yo, listen to this. Goose Watch continues, okay?
Really?
Yeah. We got more news. No.
I was just watching a bunch of videos of geese like attacking soldiers and tigers.
What?
Yes.
All right. So wait, let me back up first. All right. So if you listen to last week's episode with Danbert Nobukan of Chumbawamba, mm-hmm. Great episode, by the way, if you haven't heard it.
Yes, go back.
You know, I told a sordid tale at the beginning of the episode of Ian and Angela the geese, an ash tree falling, killing one of them. My neighbor thinks it was Angela. The subsequent guilt, the fallout, the crying on my knees, the Manchester by the Sea moments, Brad's cold, dead heart and dealing with the information. We went through this all last week, but guess what's going on now? You know what's nice? What's nice is when I get to bring a hopeful tinge to things, right?
There's half as much goose shit in your yard.
No, it's got nothing to do with this. See, don't minimize me right now, okay? But guess who's maybe starting to hit the match.com? Goosematch.com.
Oh, no. There's another suitor.
Listen, I have a hard time telling geese apart. So unless a new couple is just moving into the property right away, like some real, you know, cold shit, didn't even let the blood dry. Or Ian went out there, cruised around, had some goose mint juleps, you know what I mean? Toasted around the scene. And I think he's bringing a lady back to the nest. Whoa. And he's courting.
Too soon.
You know what? Let's think though. What's the life of a goose?
Right. You're right.
Like, what is like average goose life? You know, let's say, you know, let me do a quick goose.
I feel like I should know this because
you should.
I've had ducks and geese as a child.
All right. Canada goose, anywhere from 10 to 15 years normally, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So what would be the acceptable
morning
time
period
for a human, like, to move on? 2 years?
Wow. I don't know.
Is that, I mean, let's say 2 years for the sake of argument. Okay. And the average lifespan is 70. Yeah. You're right. That's still too soon. Still too soon. Only a week? I wonder now. Now I got to wonder what was going on in that goose relationship where, like, maybe.
Oh, you think it was murder?
Oh, I didn't even think about that. He pushed her. Now, see, we're talking about this too, because we opened this episode with Laura Jane Grace. She had posted on the Instagram a story about being attacked by a goose running in Chicago. So, you know, we do know the violent nature of these animals, prone to biting, as you say, wing attacks.
Yeah,
Laura was apparently kicked many times by the goose. So honestly, story's starting to add up here, man. Evidence that this could have been intentional. Like that, you know, these ash trees, if, you know, they got to know they're coming down.
Yeah.
You hear the crack. Oh, I slipped, you know?
Or maybe he actually broke it. Broke the branch.
No, it wasn't. No, that I got
it.
That I'll rule out of evidence.
It was too big. Okay.
Yeah, I'll take that one out of evidence. Man, I should have chalk lined the body so I could have really done some analysis here. But so anyway, without you turning it super dark about goose murder, this was an intro supposed to be about goose love, you know, and second chances. You know what I mean?
I'm sure it's totally innocent.
Speaking of goose love, a lot of this episode is about Lord Jean Grey's falling in love.
Yeah.
Very nice. There's some hopeful stuff going on over there.
Yeah.
Besides for the intro about the goose attack, which we will talk about, you know? Mm-hmm. New record, yep. Traveling, mm-hmm. Greece, going to Greece under, you know, grants by Jacqueline Onassis.
It sounds so, like pretty spectac.
Yeah, like I got a studio in St. Louis and, you know, I don't know. Laura's always got some cool stuff going on. And
yeah.
It was cool to catch up this time because it was like, you know, let's not talk about guitars. Let's not talk about stuff like that. Like, this was a proper, like, catch up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Felt nice and seeing where really, like, you know, it's been a wild ride, I think, since, you know, Against Me's last record and moving and COVID and, you know, kind of this transitory period musically. And so it's nice to see a kind of hopeful and vibey Laura, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Even the talk of all this, if I could recommend, you know, we talked about psychedelics a bit on this show. And doing microdosing, something I haven't really dabbled with yet, but I did find on Amazon Prime today a documentary called Magic Ride or something like that about Ken Kesey, you know, the author of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's
yeah,
Nest,
yeah.
Going on a magical bus ride tour with with a bunch of merry bandits doing LSD back in 1964. And so a lot of talk today about, you know, the benefits of jumping to the other side. What's over there, you know? I got to tell you, man. That's
deep.
It might be where the answers are.
Could be.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So we talk Geese, we talk psychedelics, we talked Against Me and what's going on with all that. We talked the solo record, how it was made. We talked, I don't know, probably a bunch of other ridiculous stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of going off track,
yeah,
which is
good.
What we like.
Well, I'm starting to bore myself. Let's listen to the interview, huh? Play the train.
Go. All right.
You always got to start with a Braveheart reference.
Yeah.
If we can.
What's fucked up is I knew it immediately. I was
you
like,
immediately were on that.
It's like, I love you. Always have. Always will.
Do you ever, I know it's like cheating sometimes, but do you ever put on Braveheart and just skip like the first 40 minutes?
You like, know what sucks is like I genuinely, when I was a teenager, I fucking loved that dumb movie, and like he ruined it, you know, like him in reality, Mel Gibson. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like to me, the Patriot movie was when it all jumped the shark, and then, you know, we went on all those shitty racist tirades or all that. But I can't watch that shit anymore.
It's funny too, especially since he went off on Jews, but it's really hard for me to give up Lethal Weapon, like, in totality.
They're so good. They're, I mean, like, and fucking Mad Max, right?
You know? Oh, I mean, like, come on. I don't want to lose it. Like, am I going to give him that much power that I have to lose these movies?
You know? What, like, about, though, have you seen, like, there was the one of his comeback movies I actually watched. I forget, like, Dragging on Concrete or something like that. It's like him and Vince Vaughn. And it's so shitty. Like, it's a decent, coherent enough movie, but just like watching it and imagining Vince Vaughn talking himself into doing it is like, it's just so gross to fucking watch. And then there's the movie where Mel Gibson plays fucking Santa Claus. Like, what is going on? Or, I'm sorry to go off on a tangent here, but what about the fucking Beaver with Jodie Foster, where Mel Gibson plays, this was his big comeback movie, you know, he's like his relationship with Jodie Foster to help people accept them again, and he plays a guy who communicates through a fucking Beaver puppet on his hand. It's like the most deranged movie. Anyway,
I vaguely remember that. I mean, I think at the time, especially, I think up until Apocalypto, I had just like a blanket no Mel policy. So I, but remember even the ones before that. I mean, remember The Man Without a Face?
Oh, it's just like, yeah, you're
just this creepy guy just befriends a little boy, like a movie you just can't make now anyway.
I'll tell you, though, every time I'm like flipping through whatever, like Netflix or HBO, and I see The Passion of the Christ on there, there's a part of me that's like, I want to watch it. Yeah. I don't know why. I want to watch a fucking like 2 hour long crucifixion or whatever. I know how it ends.
When's the last time you've taken it in?
I watched it once whenever it came out, you know?
Yeah.
But there's something about it, I guess, that where I'm like, I want to watch that again.
I think you should do it. If there's some morbid curiosity leading you towards it.
All right. Next date night, I suppose.
Hey, you want to sit back and take in Passion? Nice easy date night movie. So this has been an ongoing topic with going off track for a while. We had a goose death a couple weeks ago. Pretty gruesome goose death.
Oh, God. We're bringing up trauma immediately. Well, holy shit. Okay.
And Brad here, not trauma for Brad, because, you know, Brad is a cold-hearted Northeastern American who immediately was just like, well, are you going to forage it for meat? But I heard recently that you yourself had a run-in with a goose.
Yeah.
What happened? You were attacked.
Yeah, this was like, you know, maybe 3-4 days ago. It was last week, whatever. Yeah. I go running at the lakeshore most mornings. I'll drop my kid off and then I'll like drive to Montrose Beach, Foster Beach, where there's like a bird sanctuary. And like, you know, there's always fucking geese there. And they're usually pretty spread out. And like, I will literally, like, I'll talk to them. I'll be like, good morning, geese. How's your day? You know, right. You know, like, it's been a fucking decade that they've been there and I've been going there. And the other morning I'm like running through a group of them, but they're way dispersed. You know, like it wasn't like I was bouncing over them, but also the ground is covered in shit. So I'm like looking at the ground to make sure I'm not stepping on like a bomb or anything. And I look up again and one of them is like just coming, charging straight towards me with its like head down on the ground. And it's like, it looks like it has fucking shoulders. So I like panicked and turned around to start to run. And like, I was had headphones on, but I know I made some dumb fucking noise, but the thing like took off flying and fucking kicked me in the head. Like it connected with the side of my head, both feet, and then like kind of hooked into my hoodie. And I'm like, at this point, just like flailing like a fucking idiot. And like, I got it free, but it's like flapping and hitting me. And I'm like fucking like panicking, you know, like,
yeah.
And then afterwards feel immediately fucking stupid. Cause I could have beat that goose up. Like, I was way bigger than that fucking goose. Yeah, and I just like, I ran away like a little fucking bitch. I was like so disappointed in myself. You know,
you needed to go back to your training.
Well, like, you know, I'm thinking to like, there was a couple years ago, I was recording in Michigan, right? And at Mark Hudson, you know, Mark, his place, and like running on the back roads there. And I like, same thing, have my headphones on. I looked up and there's a fucking dog charging towards me. Ooh. And immediately instinct kicked in where I like, made myself bigger and I yelled at the dog and the dog like cowered and turned away. Wow. So after this, I was like, why didn't I do that? It was like a fucking goose.
What do you think? How long ago was the Mark Hudson studio incident?
That was 2018. I've lost my nerve.
What's changed in you since then?
I hit my 40s, you know?
Especially like...
No, listen, a goose coming out of nowhere is a fucking... is an unexpected, crazy scenario that nobody is going to be prepared for. I'm guaranteeing. And the other thing is, you know what they do is they can... supposedly, they can break an arm with their wings. They hit you with the front of their wings.
Well, the force surprised me. I just like didn't know what was happening all of a sudden. Because it like connected with the side of my head. Yeah. I was like, I turned around. I'm thinking I'm pretty fast. It's like I'm already in motion, you know? But I had to do like an abrupt turn. And like then it was too late.
How deep into the run were you at that point?
I was like 35 minutes exactly into the run. I got it pretty timed out. So yeah.
So pretty long distance in. And what are you listening to at this point? Or do you listen to anything?
Yeah, I was listening to Block Party, Silent Alarm, that record.
Oh, that's a good record. That's a good running record.
If it can be broken, it can be fixed. Yeah. It can be lost, and it can be like it was during that song, during the epic, like promise the world will change it. And the fucking goose is kicking me in the side of the head. It was like, just like, I felt so stupid afterwards. Like, yeah.
Well, I mean, I think Brad's right. Like, take it easy on yourself. Yeah. You know, like some days it's kill or be killed out there, but I do think this goose had the element of surprise, and I do think too naturally, right? A charging dog is like your immediate instinct is like I might die, you know what I mean? Like if this dog gets a hold of me or something, right? Like your goose instinct might immediately be a bit more confusion.
But I've been attacked by a pit bull before. I literally like had a pit bull clamp down onto my arm and I kept complete calm and like looked at my friend whose dog it was. And I was like, get your fucking dog off my arm, man. Yes. And he did, you know, but like, and there was like a divot. I still have a scar taken out of my arm. But like in the moment of like confrontation with a goose, I just could not.
Now this is something to explore. I mean, do you actively go to therapy or anything?
You know, I'm on outs with my therapist right now. So I don't know. Like, I might need to start back up. Well, I've been seeing like the same therapist on and off for like a decade. I was talking about them a little earlier, actually. But you know, the past couple months of my life kind of got a little crazy, and I just like haven't been going. I don't know. I've been feeling good though, so maybe it's just one long manic episode. We'll see what happens.
So yeah, speaking of which, like in the last couple months, you've gotten married.
Yes.
And went to Greece.
I did.
And got in a car accident and attacked by a goose.
Yeah. And attacked by a goose and moved.
And moved, right. Yes. So can you take me through some of this chronology? Like what's actually been happening with yourself?
I fell in love in November and it was just like fell in love, you know? And
like,
then...
Like, can you... Are you at liberty to... Was it like a... 80s romantic comedy kind of moment, like a gaze catches a gaze kind of thing?
Well, it was like kind of like more like a, you know, like go on a date and it was just then. It was like there, like, okay, this is it. You know, like went to New Orleans together. My wife is a comedian and they were like doing a gig there. So I went to see them do stand up just like to meet them for the first time. And I was like, okay, I'm done. Like, and I don't know, like a month later, we were getting married in Vegas and then... that was in December. And then,
was it an Elvis? Did you do an Elvis?
Yeah. Full on went to Little White Wedding Chapel and like Elvis officiated. And it was like, he was really good. He like turned the charm on. And what was really cool too, is like, he like, before the ceremony started, he had a whole pronouns moment with me, like in a really like respectful way.
Where I was
like,
that's good.
Wow. Thank you. You are the king. and then like Greece wasn't a honeymoon, but it like fucking, it was like working, but like not a bad work trip.
So yeah, you had
right
shows
after getting married. Yeah. Was brought over there by the Onassis Foundation for two shows in Athens and then one in Thessaloniki, and drove between the two places.
Is this like Jacqueline Onassis?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, which is...
What is the Onassis Foundation? I don't even know.
Well, it's the Onassis Foundation. So it's his foundation. They are like an arts foundation. And so I got involved with them. There's this one one artist, film director named Christos, who did a documentary on the Negrita prison in northern Greece. And the documentary is called Walls. It's a short documentary. And he asked me to do some soundtrack work for it. And what he wanted me to do was take a poem by a Greek poet named C.P. Kafafi and take the English translation of the poem and then turn it into a song. So like, I had to take a translation of a poem, which was kind of awkward, make it into lyrics, and then set it to music. And it was really, it was a cool experience and like worked really well. And then they invited me over for the performances. And then while we were there, we actually went and did a tour of the Negrita prison, which was fucking insane. Just how lax it was. And it was literally like me, Christos, my wife Paris, and John Gerhardt, who is like my road dog for life. And then two prison guards just walking us through the prison, like prisoners all around us. Like we went into one of their cells, hung out. Shit. We went into the like kitchen and ate some of the food. I did pull-ups in the gym. We went onto the basketball court. We went into the church, like all around.
What makes this prison special that there was a documentary about it?
It's squalor. Like it's horrible conditions. There was just trash everywhere and it's fucking horribly underfunded. And it was like, you know, it was kind of alarming where like even, you know, with check-in, I was like, I had my like journal on me and I was like, oh, you know, I know they said not to take photos and I won't do that, but I want to kind of sneak my journal in. And I did, like I stuck my fucking journal and pen into a prison, you know?
Wow. Holy shit.
So it was like, not on the level in a lot of ways. Yeah. Incredible experience.
That must've been crazy to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Really like, you know, like, I don't know, really like a deep experience that it's hard to put into words or really describe it. Like while we were over there, got to do a lot of the classic tourist stuff too. Like with when saw the Parthenon and like we went to Thermopylae where like the, you know, the 300 movie, the like right. Sparta thing supposedly happened. And there's also like a thermal hot springs, which is what used to be considered like the gates of hell. And we went swimming and drove a little way up Mount Olympus. And that was really cool. And then I'm going back there. We're both going back there this summer. I was like given a grant with a program called the Onassis Air program to go and live in Athens for a month and do kind of like an open-ended art project and collaborate with local artists there. So that's going to be awesome. And then like, there's another cool connection with that too, in that like, so like it's the Onassis Foundation and obviously Onassis was married to Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis and my wife Paris grew up in the house that was Jacqueline Kennedy's after JFK. Was assassinated.
Get the fuck out of here.
So like crazy connection. And then what's even...
Wait, where's that house?
In DC. And then what's even crazier is that, so my wife's father passed away in like 1992 and he was a blues guitarist named John Campbell, and Christos, who was our host in Greece and who, in, you know, like who I started the whole collaboration with, saw Paris's dad play in Greece on tour in the 90s before he passed away. Wow. And while we were over there, he still had the ticket stub from the show was able to give it to Paris, which was really cool.
Wow. So it's almost like some kind of, you know, I don't know.
Like it's like Kismet. It feels like it's meant to be. It's cool as fuck. You know,
thanks for going to Yiddish too. That's nice.
When shit like that happens, you're like, yeah, I'm on the right path.
Yeah. It just feels right. Yeah. So you're going to be living in Athens
for the month of July. Yep.
Mm-hmm. What a trip. Yeah. How's your Greek?
Terrible, fucking terrible. Sure. But you know, it's unfortunate where like, just like most of Europe, like, most people there speak multiple languages and they speak English, right? You know, and you just get to go over there and be a dumb American.
Americans abroad, right?
100%. But I'm gonna make an effort, especially with this coming up, you know, and like, I really like the opportunity to collaborate with like artists there and to just like really fully immerse. Like it was cool when we were over there in January. So like we were supposed to fly out of Thessaloniki and then there was some weather event in Germany. So our flight was canceled. So we ended up driving back to Athens. And our driver and one of the musicians I collaborated with over there was this guy, Jack. And Jack and his friend Orestes played in a Greek punk band called Despite Everything that were pretty big. And so the four of us, me, Paris, Jack, and Orestes, that night we went back to Jack's house. And he has a studio at his house, which is incredible. It's like this lush green courtyard with a wraparound house, and you're just like recording in it. And then we like recorded all night and recorded this fucking amazing track that just like, I don't know, like I'm really excited for people to hear it. And it was one of those magical moments where like, you know, you're high as fuck, everyone's smoking weed and you're just jamming and like something comes together, and it wouldn't have happened if there wasn't a disaster, you know, but
yeah. And all the while set in like a lush green Greek studio. Yes. And yeah, that seems like a pretty mythical experience there.
Yes.
That sounds like a nice place. What kind of, like, when you say collaborating with art, like, are you going to be doing music? Like what kind of,
yeah, something like that. Cause like, well, the, you know, the song that came together with me, Paris, Jack and Orestes, like, was so cool. And it was such a magical moment that it was like, I want to chase that. I want to see what happens.
Yeah,
but at
yeah.
the same time, like going into it, I also don't want to put a pressure situation on myself. So I kind of like the way I like pitched my idea to them was kind of open-ended, of giving myself a couple avenues to where it's like, I hope to go over there and come back in a month with an amazing record and we just make magic happens. But right. if not, I'll come back with some piece of writing, or I'll come back with something, you know, like sure. there'll be something that comes out of it, and it'll kind of, the experience will inform what that is, which is
I
cool.
mean, you can always go full on and just really get into absinthe or a new kind of drug when you're there. And all of a sudden after 2 weeks, your performance art, you're doing all sorts of, I don't know. I mean,
I do need a new kind of drug. You know, I was talking about saying. With my wife a little earlier. I was like, we were smoking a joint and I was like, I'm not getting stoned anymore, man. Like, I need to take a fucking break. I just do not get high. It's just like leveling out, you know?
Yeah, you're like those people when I go to the dispensary and I talk to somebody and they're like, yeah, but you know, I'm like different. Like for me, I got to like dab and then I got to mix this and that for it to even like work. And I'm like, shit, like, yeah, maybe you should start microdosing or something if this is... You know.
Well, we've been fucking around with the microdosing. There's this company that actually, like, you can find them on Instagram. I hope they hear this and then I fulfill my duty of promoting their shit for the free mushrooms they sent me.
You know, going off track is, it's massive worldwide. So
I'll link yeah. them, tag them in this. But they're called Happy Caps. And, like, they, you just follow them on Instagram and then they'll fucking, like, send you capsules.
At Happy Caps?
Yeah, I'm sure they'd send you a bunch of free shit.
Hey, we need some ad spots on here.
Yeah. Fucking hit them up. And it's like, they have like a chocolate that's more like, if you eat the chocolate, then you're going to have like some visuals and a psychedelic experience. Gave me a little anxiety. But then there's like a powder that you can like just put a scoop or two in your coffee in the morning that, you know, it's not like you're tripping, but it gives you that euphoric lift. Or there's capsules too. But yeah.
What's your experience with that been like? Like,
it's, you know, like past couple months, I feel like I've had a more expanded experience with mushrooms, just like in feeling like they're more available even too, you know?
Sure.
But historically, I mean, like I've had my first psychedelic experiences when I was probably like 13, 14 years old, both with like LSD and mushrooms respectively. And, like I felt like during my teen years, acid was much more around. And and living in Florida, mushrooms are around because you could just go to like cow fields and find them. But then there was a long period of time during my 20s where I felt like just you never saw anyone with acid, or I never got offered it. And then it like kind of came back into my life in my 30s where all of a sudden I was like, yes, LSD.
Do you think, so I've always been, I had like a family, like a close family member where like, who had, you know, an experience, well, a bunch of experiences with, you know, LSD and mushrooms that kind of led them on a journey they did not want to go on. And I was always kind of afraid of repeating that journey. But as I get older, I think I'm a lot less afraid to kind of visit these places in my mind and open some doors. Like in your experience, do you like when I hear some of the, you know, like a Ram Dass talk, or like, you know, when Timothy Leary used to speak, like they talk about this expansive like universe that's just like, almost impossible to tap into like without stuff like this. Like, do you think that that's true?
You know, what's funny is like, as you were asking this, I was thinking about it and I realized that I had an experience exactly like that. Even when we were on tour together, when we played, we did two nights at the 9:30 club, right?
Yeah.
Didn't we?
Uh-huh.
And the night in between, we had rooms at the hotel right around the corner and I had some acid and I went after the show and dropped and stayed up all night and had this incredible experience of just organizing everything in my suitcase and in my backpack, uh-huh. right? Like all laid out on the hotel floor. And it like, everything just made sense to me. And I slept some and woke up that morning with just this like, just this feeling of euphoric clarity that I carried with me for a good like 2-3 years afterwards of like just feeling like I had it all figured out, you know? And I've had a couple times like that where like, again, when the pandemic hit, you know, I do month on month off parenting with my kid. And so, you know, I'd spend a month with my kid and then I'd be fucking alone, you know, in my apartment for a month. Wow. And there was one month where I 2 weeks straight, I just took acid every day and would smoke weed and go on the longest runs. And after that, I felt like I had this real moment of clarity in a non-panic way. And then similarly, this past fall in like September, I had like a moment like that where I took like acid for 2 or 3 days and like, just like, it's hard to like describe like where I got to in my head, but I felt like afterwards, like, yes, I broke through something there.
Right, right. And something that I feel like what other avenues are there to even get to that place? Like going, you know, is it like a cheat? Like the only other way is to like go into an ashram and be silent for like 36 hours or like, you know, and this is like a nice, maybe more direct approach.
I think that, you know, like I'm really so compelled by the idea of that and of natural highs. And to some extent, I definitely feel like I've experienced natural highs. Like the runner's high is sure. so real, you know?
Yeah, right.
But like the meditation psychedelic high, I don't know if I have the patience for that, but realizing I don't have the patience or the focus for that makes me want the patience and focus for that. So yeah, then it makes, you know, taking a LSD or a mushrooms kind of feel like a cheat.
Right, right.
But I don't know, you know, like
when you do like the month on month off parenting, like I'm kind of imagining myself in that, like, is it hard to fight the instinct the first like day or two after you drop off your kid to just go on like some version of like a bender? Like, is that the it's got to be the instinct, right?
For sure. Yeah, there is. There's like the 2-day weekender of like, right. I'm going to just like fucking smoke all the weed in the world right now, you know?
And like I just did it for 30 days and I was good as fuck. Like, here we go.
Yeah, 100%, you know? But I don't know. You know, it's interesting. This past year, like that was kind of tied into that breakthrough moment where like from February until August, I quit caffeine, I quit sugar, and I quit THC. And I was just completely like, I still go to the gym like every other day, but I was going to the gym every day, fucking running every day, like just really focused on health. I wasn't even drinking bubbly drinks. And what fucked me up is I was on a long drive back from the West Coast, played some dates with Murder by Death, and I had a sip of green tea. And it would hit me like fucking crack rock. And I've just been chasing the dragon ever since with caffeine. But
just the one. So wait, so what prompted like quitting all of that stuff? Like is that the way you actually functionally think like ideally you'd like to be living if you had?
Honestly, no. I was like having a little bit of a health issue where I was having some acid reflux issues, right? And then also I was having like, we're getting real, Benny. We're in Let's our 40s. I was having some like urinary tract issues, right? Uh-huh. And what it ended up being though was like, I was not stretching properly before running. And it was like my inside leg muscles were just fucking so constricted. Crazy. But also like being so constricted and running and working out all the time and drinking like 12 shots of espresso and maybe 16 LaCroix a day. You don't do that. You need to not do that.
Uh-huh. See, this is why I was just joking the other day with my wife. I'm like, you know, I used to really wonder why you'd be around a bunch of old people and all you could hear about was like surgeries and things like that. I'm like, I'm not there yet, but I get it. I'm like, this is all what we're going through now. And, you know, if you just got a knee replacement surgery, maybe you got some good information for me. I'm like, you know, but... Yeah, no, it was. So were you on kind of like an elimination diet sort of thing when you were doing that?
Yeah, I just did. Like, I didn't feel good and I didn't know what it was. So I just kind of eliminated as much as I could and started at square one. You know? And then I have like just been putting a real, like, genuine focus on like working out and health and like with John Gerhardt in particular, like, because the past couple of years, it's just been me and him kind of on the road cruising around in like a Chrysler Pacifica or whatever.
Yeah.
And we'll just like, you know, we'll on the days off, we just go to the gym and we'll like do epic 2-3 hour workouts. And then we'll go to an Applebee's after and like fucking eat chicken, you know?
So hotel, gym, and Applebee's is like,
yeah. And the show, yeah. You know, like, and right, that's the gig, right?
Well, you got to get into some kind of rhythm, right? Like it helps. Now, like I just saw, like, I was curious because I know you're getting ready to go out in May. And you have a bunch of shows, like, you know, you've been hardcore pretty much touring, you know, take away COVID since what, you know, late 90s, I guess, at this point, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have to assume, like, what is your lead up to tour look like at this point? Cause you've been on so many. Is it like ritualized and like, and what are the rituals that you're doing to kind of prep these days?
Well, that's, you know, part of the working out all the time is right. That, you know, like
you're just trying to get wind.
Yeah. I need the lung power. Yeah. And if I let it slip, it's so hard to get it back, you right, know? And right, like, right. So that takes the place of actually practicing most of the time, you know?
Are you still not smoking on tour and stuff?
Yeah. I can't smoke when on tour. So, but that's part of it then too, is like a week or 2 weeks before a tour, I'll quit smoking, but I'll still like eat edibles or like hit a vape. That's right, okay. Right, usually. Right. But like, I'll do vocal warm-ups every day, like 45 minutes of it. And I'll like just play along to the records, you know, like, it's hard because like I get less and less enthusiastic about practicing old songs that I've been playing for fucking yes, 20 years, yes, you know, like yes. My motivation to practice, like, I don't know, maybe I'm an anarchist is like nil. Right. But,
yeah,
but it's been cool because singing with my wife and having them be a part of it, like, has kind of renewed that because it's fun to sit at home and to sing with them. So that's been helping.
Gave it new life a little bit.
For sure. Cause it's the alone thing that sucks, you know? And like, when Against Me was still active, we haven't lived in the same city for a long, long time. So I missed that like relationship with the band where you all live in the same place and you get together X amount of times a week and you jam and then you go on tour.
Right.
But I don't have that now. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. Yeah. So besides for that, like, what about, like, what do you need? Like, what do you, okay, I have 21 days, so I have 21 pairs of underwear, or like, you know, how hardcore are you?
I have such a passion for trying to minimize what I'm taking on yes. tour and try to get like the perfect pack
yes.
and the most efficient pack too.
That's right.
And in that I'm even like, this morning I was thinking like, I need to get another pair of tweezers so that I can leave one pair of tweezers in the medicine cabinet and just leave the other one in my bag. And that's I don't right. need to remember to pack it, you know,
it's back and forth just doesn't work. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, there's like, I feel I have two packs in that there's the bigger suitcase, longer tour pack, and the smaller suitcase, Samsonite pack, right? Mm. And then I have like a Pelican case that's like my everything I need, but I try to just keep all that shit packed, you know? And I'm like more, if you saw me right now surrounded by all the shit in this room, you'd be like, what a fucking joke. But I'm more and more obsessed with minimalism these days and just like getting rid of shit and not having as much, you know?
Yeah.
Cause like, I feel like I need to run through a checklist visually of everything before I can leave and making sure everything's in order.
Right.
But I don't know, like a lot lately too has been trying to play catch up on the just like, oh, I got to send that email or like, you know, got to put in that fucking merch order or like,
yeah,
got to promote, got to remember to post on Instagram or whatever, you know,
the stuff.
Yes. The administrative side of being an artist, which is the least fun side of being an artist, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Luckily, as a drummer, when Gaslight's active, it's one of the most beautiful things to me is I just don't have to partake so much. You know?
Yeah, I miss it. I fucking miss being with a band so much. Although I have that now, you know, which is cool. But it like only this last tour was out feeling like, okay, it's a band. I got a band with me. This
yeah,
is fucking awesome.
Right,
you know?
Right. But this group you got going now feeling like the steady thing for a while, you think?
Yeah, it feels like everyone's on the same page, and it's like, like Matt said it, where he's like, it feels like a good, perfect mix of like loose but like focused. And I don't know, the shows and the whole vibe this last tour really, really fun, and I just see a lot of possibility with it. And I don't know. Want to see where it goes.
So who is it? Of course, I know Mikey intimately, but what's the other parts right now?
So Mikey Erg is playing drums, and then Matt Patton is playing bass. And okay. Matt plays also with Drive By Truckers, and then he plays with the Dexateens and has had a couple other bands. And then Matt owns a record label called Dial Back Sound, and he has a studio down in Water Valley, Mississippi, of the same name. And this past December, me and Paris and Mikey went down there, and like I had the session booked with Matt because Matt played on my solo record that came out last month. And so like I had the session booked for months in advance because he like came, played on my record, and I knew he had a studio. So I'm like, hell yeah, I want to come down.
So
and
initially
check it out.
It was just like your idea was just it was going to be the two of you essentially.
100%. And then like met Paris, we're engaged, we're going to get married a couple days after the session. So I'm like, well, fucking, you're coming with me,
right.
You know, like, and then once we're there, it's like Water Valley, there's nothing else going on, you know, like you can see both ends of the town. So I'm like, well, you're going to fucking sing too. So like, we just did it and it all came together, the four of us, and we recorded like six songs and making plans to put that out later on this year now. So it was just, it was a really, really cool experience, especially like with in the narrative of falling in love, you know, going back to talking about it being kind of like a rom-com, right? So I don't know. It feels good.
Maybe that's the next book, more of like a romantic tour story. You can get more into the soft paperback kind of genre, perhaps.
Maybe, you know, see, it, like there was other shit too, where like then pretty soon after we started dating, I had like Paris lived in New York at the time. So like I told my management, I was like, put me in New York City. I give you as much work there as you can, cause I want to see this person. And like one of the gigs I got was like playing a song with Dinosaur Jr. They did like a week at Music Hall of Williamsburg.
Yeah,
so I got to do like The Cure's Just Like Heaven. I got to sing that with fucking Dinosaur Jr. backing me while like my fiance then is there with me. I'm like, I look cool. Thank you, Dinosaur Jr. So there was like, I don't know, lots of shit like that.
That's awesome. Now, like, so you are now like what, 8 years removed from the last Against Me record, and
it's fucked up,
and you're seemingly like, you know, pretty content with what's going on. I mean, is that like, what if anything can be expected in that avenue at this point?
Well, I mean, honestly, like I hate it too. You know, like I'm content in that, like I'm in a place of like, well, it is what it is, you know, like, and like, I love this that I'm doing now. And I had to put a lot of work into getting to this place, you know, like I'm finally playing with other musicians and that's awesome. But at the same time, I like miss the fuck out of it.
Yeah.
And my whole thing has always been like, you know, I'm out here on the road and I'm playing these songs still. It's not like I'm like, I don't want to do Against Me. I won't sing these songs. I'm up there and I'm singing them. If other people in the band wanted to be up there on stage playing them too, fucking get up there on stage with me and play the songs. You know, like I don't know like how to demonstrate that to people, but it's not like, it's not only up to me, you know? And so I kind of got to like, just wait to see what happens. I don't know. It felt like for a second things were going to get moving again. And then that Rolling Stone article came out and I was like, ah, shit, I think I fucked things up. So I don't know.
So what exactly was that?
Because I mentioned that like, oh, we're talking again and it looks like we may play again. And then it like kind of went cold again.
I see.
Yeah.
Just you ran your mouth.
I ran my mouth. But I was saying good things. So yeah, I wasn't like talking shit. Like, I always run my mouth, you know?
Right. At least it was on the good side this time.
I'm consistent, you know?
It's true. Well, like I heard a story that I was like wondering might shine some light on it. And it was that you told some story about like the song Mercenary and how you kind of brought it to Against Me and it kind of didn't go well as far as them like receiving the song. And I was like, I was trying to imagine, like, I'm like, what's the scenario there? Cause like, I know kind of all the parties involved. And I was like, it like really like you were brought in a song and it just got totally like poo-pooed.
Yeah. You know, it's a very common occurrence where, especially with me, James and Andrew, you know, Adam is like super adaptive and Adam will start playing to anything and can like, you know, try to come up with something.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But like I brought in the song and it was early when Andrew was playing with us again. And I had originally written the song on bass and it was like a kind of different riff. But so like we're getting in the room together and I was like, hey, you know, like I've got this song. Y'all want to try it? Like, let me see your bass. I'll show you real quick. And immediately it was like, oh, like James made a comment like that. I was like, fuck, man. Like, I'm just trying to like, why is there ego involved in this? Just right, like, right, you know, right. Like I can, we can all play the guitar. We can all play the bass, whatever. But like, so, you know, I showed the bass line and, you know, the, like the lyrics were a little different and it had a little bit of a different groove, but it was just like, it was a non-starter. There was nowhere to go with it. People did not like it. There's no excitement for it, you know, like, and it's not like anyone ever comes in the next day being like, hey, I messed around with that riff a little and I had this idea, right, you know, right. Like, it's just, that was it. You know, it's like a turd in the swimming pool. And the honestly, like, you know, the songs that became the Stay Alive album were all songs that were Against Me songs that we had been working on that I brought to the band. And though it wasn't, yeah. And, you know, Mercenary predated some of those songs. I had been working on it that long. And all those songs, like, the vibe wasn't good. You know, like people weren't necessarily feeling it. And I look at some of those songs now and I'm like, okay, I get it. You know, whatever. Like, maybe it's not my strongest shit or whatever, but like, I'm like, fuck it. I wrote like 30 songs. What do y'all want me to do? Right. Like, you know, help me out.
Now, was it always like that with Against Me? Like even back in the day, like.
Yes and no, you know, like, cause like I started it myself. Right. So like I wrote all the initial songs and then it was me and Kevin. And me and Kevin had a spark where, but it's like different when it's a guitar drummer thing. And I've always been like, I need the connection with the drummer. I need to vibe with them. Cause, and I think a little bit of that is that like, I started out playing bass in punk bands. So I like play rhythmically, right?
Right. Sure.
So, you know, I had that with Kevin, but I did not have that with Warren, which like was weird. And like Warren's points of reference were way different than me and James's. And the easiest way I can explain that is like me and James came up loving Rancid and Operation Ivy. So if you play this kind of chord progression, this is the kind of drum beat that goes with it.
Right.
Warren did not listen to Operation Ivy. You know, yeah. Like Andrew did not listen to Operation Ivy. Andrew doesn't know how to play the song Knowledge. Right. So there's like just, you know, your references are different. So sure. Oftentimes I bring songs that were clearly like, this needs 16ths on the hi-hat. And Warren can't do 16ths on the hi-hat.
Right,
so I had to like tailor my writing to knowing where his aesthetics were. And it often happened like that. Like George Ribello has a really distinct style of drumming. And I realized really quick what kind of drummer he was and then had to tailor my style to it kind of.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't have chosen two more different drummers from that jump. For sure.
Yeah. It's like driving in different cars, you know, and like feeling the different transmissions or whatever. And, but Adam is like way, like I vibe so well with Adam's playing and always have. And Mikey too. Like I vibe so well with Mikey's playing. And I think Mikey, you know, is like really clearly to me, like a Ringo Starr influenced drummer, which I connect with and I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's like, he's such a music nerd that I'm sure every reference you make, he probably knows more, not only understands it, but like knows more than a person is supposed to know about it.
It's hard with songwriting though, because like oftentimes, you know, like you, when you're introducing an idea, like you have to embarrass yourself. You have to be willing to say something stupid, a stupid lyric.
Yeah.
And if other people aren't willing to embarrass themselves with you, like it's hard to connect, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I heard something that rung. I know it's like the most bizarre people to bring up in this context, but I saw, I think Matt Damon doing an interview about making Good Will Hunting. And I guess like Ben Affleck said to him in the writing process, like, judge me for my best idea, but don't judge me for my worst idea. You know, just basically like this idea that like, And if you keep that kind of vibe to a creative scenario, then at least like everything is allowed to get through the door and at least get workshopped, you know?
Right.
And then like, if it sucks, it sucks. But like no idea is bad, right? Like I think there is, you know, once you start getting into like a collaborative situation, it's probably really important to remember some part of that, I think.
Sure. But, you know, it takes like a thick skin in a way. And that was one of the reasons why I really like connected and worked well with Butch Vig. Cause like Butch is notorious for like doing 100 takes of something. Right. You know, and I was always more than willing to like, try it like this, try it like this.
Right,
what about
right.
like this? Do it like that without taking any insult of like, what you didn't like the previous thing, just like trying to serve the song, find the best thing, you know, like no ego about it.
But I find that's like, that's easier to give up though, right? When you're like, I remember when we worked with Brendan O'Brien, like he would come up with an idea or something that in my head I wasn't necessarily sure about. and that instinct in me that goes like, what the fuck do you know? And then I'd quickly just go to like the receipts and be like, oh, okay. Like probably knows something. So I'll just do it. Like it's kind of easy. It's easier to take it from Butch Vig, right? Like where you're like, when you get the, what the fuck do you know instinct? And then it's like, oh, right. You know something.
That helps. That helps. Yeah. But I think that like, what's cool is that when you have a wealth of experiences with different musicians of all like places in, I don't know, their career, for lack of a better term or whatever, in their artistry, like you realize that it's, I don't know, it like humbles you and you learn to like adapt, you know, and like work differently with people and that it's okay, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I know there's always an instinct for songwriters sometimes, especially if you like get a very specific idea in your head about the way something should be. But like, you know, like any good coach or any good manager or any good something, like you do in the moment have to know exactly like how to amplify the best things out of what you have, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's like, that's, I think a lot of the trick maybe in being a producer or even being a functional like leader of a band, you know, is like, is that if you're trying to turn someone into something they're not, it's going to just create a different kind of problem, right? And if you need someone to be something that they're not, like, then just get somebody else.
Right, right. Which is like also like that immediately too made me think of like tattooing, you know, like that's so clearly demonstrable with tattooing, you know, like someone. Because like if you want a certain style of tattooing and you look at someone's tattooing and that's not their style, yes, go to someone else. Don't expect them to do that style on
you. I am a walking example of that. Like there are like three tattoos on me that I look at and I've been like, oh my God, you should have shut the fuck up, dude. Like... Like, why did you say anything?
When you realize like, oh, well, I'm not a tattoo artist. What do I fucking know?
Yeah,
and exactly. I can't even see the way it looks on my body
exactly,
the same way they can.
Exactly.
You know?
It's insane. It's insane. Wait, so do you live in, I'm confused about St. Louis. Do you just, is that where you have a studio or like, do you live there at all anymore?
I still own the studio. So like, I did not expect that I'd be married in 2024.
Okay. Yeah, this really.
And so, like, it happened, and then, like, immediately, you know, both of us have kids, so we're like, all right, how do we merge our lives together? So we bought a house, and like, I'm in the, but like, just I moved out of my condo here to move in here, but instead of selling the studio, I ended up renting it out. My friend David Beeman, who recorded Hole in My Head, does a lot of work with the International Institute in St. Louis.
Oh, cool.
And I saw him posting about a refugee family from Afghanistan that had been in the country for 3 months that was in unsafe living conditions and needed someplace to go.
Wow.
And the Institute was like willing to cover a certain amount of rent to help them out. And I was like, okay, well, this place is just sitting here, so you all should take the apartment upstairs and I'll just worry about it next year. And that'll be cool.
Are they still there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How's that like work? Like, how's that going?
I mean, David Beeman, who like, again, recorded the record, he's like their, They're like sponsor, essentially. So he's like, you know, he's kind of liaisoning and helping them get settled and everything like that. But I like left all my family's furniture there for them. And it's like, you know, husband and wife. And like, I think they have 4 kids. And I could only imagine what the fuck they thought of me when David brought them over to be like, yeah, this is your landlord or like whatever.
Yeah, like, I mean, essentially, right?
Yeah.
But, you should just come over and like, you know, what's a good like an old school super picture, like the guy coming to America. You need like a like overalls and something like a bowler hat. And,
exactly.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. What though? What if like the kids start like a fucking awesome band? Like, what if they sneak down at night or something?
I would be so
and
into
it's
it.
Like the coolest, like behind the music story ever of like, you know, the best Afghani American metal band in history or something, you know?
Fucking amazing. Fucking amazing.
That would be great. Talk about feeding the next generation in the right way, you know? So I guess at this point, like, I mean, are you kind of, you know, is St. Louis kind of getting removed from the narrative? I mean, you didn't even write a song about how you hate it yet.
Well, I
was
love
disappointed.
It. That's the thing. I
so
fucking
pissed.
Love St. Louis. I love St. Louis. And there's several songs on the record, new record, that like kind of have references or in slight odes to St. Louis.
Right.
But, you know, St. Louis is like, it's an underdog city and it's so like written off. And it's amazing because like, it's not amazing. It's kind of terrifying, right? But like Paris has been adjusting to like moving from to New York to Chicago and realizing like, oh shit, like New York is like way relatively safer than Chicago. Chicago's really dangerous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then realizing like, but St. Louis is like even more dangerous than Chicago.
Yeah.
As demonstrated by getting fucking T-boned by a drunk driver back in January.
Oh, this was the car accident.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning and I did a DJ gig for my friend's birthday and we were driving south on the King's Highway and this dude drunk off his ass just slammed into the side of my Jeep and like bent the tire underneath it and was like pulled over and the cops came. Dude was so shit faced. He could not like maneuver his car away to get off some ice or whatever. And the cops just like let him go. It was crazy.
Really?
But but you know, the cop's like sitting there talking to me and over the radio as he's talking to me is like the radio is being like gunshot wounds to the head, north side, blah, blah, blah. You know, like it was like, obviously you got bigger shit going on and like this car accident is not a priority right now.
Wow.
So,
okay. Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
I got in an argument though at this bar, the Whiskey Ring in St. Louis, not too long ago, where there was this dude there who was from Stoke-on-Trent, England, right?
Okay, yeah.
And like he sat down at whatever the picking tables outside of this bar and like he had a like armful of tattoos. So he started talking to me about my tattoos and I was being polite and asked him about his tattoos or whatever. But you know, in truth, his tattoos were shit. I just didn't say that, right? But so he starts talking about how dangerous Stoke-on-Trent is and what a badass he is because he's from Stoke-on-Trent. And I'm like listening and listening. And all of a sudden it dawns on me. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about, man? We're in like St. Louis.
Yeah,
like what
dude.
The fuck does Stoke-on-Trent have on St. Louis? Like there are no guns there.
That's absolute insanity. I can't help, sometimes even to my detriment, I can't help but walk around places in like Europe just thinking basically I'm the toughest motherfucker in this city. Just because of where I'm from. Like, I'm not. You've been on tour with me, you know me. Like, I couldn't fight. Like, I don't fucking know. But I feel like I walk around with such gusto and like Munster, Germany. I'm like, who the fuck is going to fuck with me here? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I had that moment last time I was in Europe when I was in Poland, where I went on a run and I got lost. My like GPS started malfunctioning and the neighborhood started looking sketchier and sketchier. And I'm looking around. But then all of a sudden I had this moment of like clarity where I was like, wait a second, I go running in St. Louis. This is fine.
Yeah, yeah. You're like fucking Rocky. You're fine. Yeah. You might as well. Wait, so we didn't totally finish the sentiment with like the against me stuff. So, I mean, essentially like to you, you know, you're doing your thing, but like until kind of people just get at you and are like, we're stoked and down to do this thing. Like you're just go off. Be on your own for then until then?
Yeah, I guess. You know, like just kind of making it up as I go along. But like, we didn't break up, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It just like the pandemic hit, we were on tour and we just kind of collapsed. And it like, you know, it taught a real valuable lesson in momentum, but then also like getting away from it, kind of realized like, damn, you know, like, okay, like I saw the things I took for granted or I saw the things that like, you know, I actually did need or didn't. And I don't know. Distance is good sometimes. So I think it's all healthy, you know?
But you do miss it to a point.
Hell yeah. I miss the fuck out of James Bowman. I love James.
Yeah.
You know, I love Adam. I love Andrew. I know he hates my guts, but that's cool. Like, you know, I'd love to play with them all again.
Hey, listen, you know, Dennis Rodman and Michael Jordan won 3 rings together without speaking to each other off the court.
Yeah.
You know?
You know?
Like sometimes he's a great fucking bass player.
And I had an A&R person once tell me that we were like the Chicago Bulls. So
I could see it, honestly. I could see it. Well, so you're MJ, but James is Pippen, Andrew is Rodman, right? And then I guess Adam is like either John Paxson or Steve Kerr. He's like the great dependable outside 3-point shooter or something. Or
see, I did watch that that documentary during the pandemic and I could give a shit less about sports, but that documentary was fantastic.
Oh, that thing is barely really into sports. It. Yeah. that thing is intense. Well, I was just telling this story this morning about the first time when Gaslight opened for Against Me on the New Wave tour, and you know, you all were still like, you were just firing on all fucking cylinders. And, you know, Andrew was still in the middle, just fucking clubbing away. And like, and I remember watching you all after the first night and all of us just being like, all right, like we don't know how to play live. And we got to be a lot better if we want to like do anything on this tour. There definitely was some benchmark shit. Like, you know, we were like doing, oh, we'll do 2 songs in tune. And then I watch you all just go fucking 20 Against Me songs. Boom, 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 boom. Like just killing. And I'm like, wow. Like,
but were they in tune? No.
No, who cares? You know, like who do you need at that? But it was, I mean, great fucking band. Let me say that.
I appreciate it, Benny.
You're welcome. Now, I was wondering this, like kind of going back to even like the Butch thing, like, you know, the last interview we spoke with Damber from Chumbawamba.
And whoa, that's rad.
Yeah, it was really cool, actually. What a like warm and awesome person to talk to. And, you know, one of the cool things about talking to him was kind of, I don't know if anybody has a more glaring experience of like both sides of the music industry, you know, like going from kind of basically crass to, you know, like one of the biggest hits in the world. But you had kind of the same thing. I mean, you came from about as you know, book your own fucking life, anarcho-punk tours to, you know, to New Wave World and Butch Vig and the big stuff. And like, I feel like you've seen like every part of the industry at this point. Like, what's that path kind of like, I don't know, overall in a broad sense, like what's it taught you about this thing of ours, you know?
Well, it's interesting because it's like, you know, there's people that were there back in the day who are no longer here, right? And like, you see the way things have changed and there is a way that it was and that way is kind of gone. And it like gives you perspective. And makes you realize some things that you took for granted, you know? But it really like, I don't know. Like a lot of the things I feel like that it's taught me are like, again, those things that are hard to verbalize, but that like are just now intrinsically a part of you, you know, and like the, your experience and like feeling like a sense of connection to it. I think about it sometimes in the terms of like, even if, with like Gainesville and like what Gainesville was in the late 90s, early 2000s and how it's changed now. And it isn't like that. And you just had to be there. But if you were there, like there's a part of you that is that always.
Sure. Yeah.
And like you carry with you every tour, every show, every day in the studio, every practice, every hour in a van or on a plane or on a fucking ferry in Europe, you know, like it's all there with you, even if you can't remember the details. And all those people and all those connections are like all a part of you and have had some kind of influence on you.
Sure.
That you may not even realize, but it's all there. And so it's like, not even a, like, what did you learn? It's just like, what are you now? You know, like,
right.
And this is what I am.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But that's taken some work and self-actualization, I imagine.
Sure. Yeah. But that's like, you know, what you got to do to survive then. Right. Cause there are peaks and valleys and there are those moments where you have to like have perspective and like start again sometimes, you know, or like you're all of a sudden without your band dudes, you know, and you're like, okay, well, who am I now in the world? And you have to figure that out. And that, you know, that was like my experience coming out of the pandemic really. And like St. Louis is a big part of that too. Cause I like, you know, I found this studio that had some cool history to it and like had been cooped up in an apartment. So I wanted to go and make music in the studio. And so made a fucking crazy move and like was going over there every other month. But St. Louis is scary as fuck. And I didn't know anyone there. And I had to like go out and like make friends and like just be a person and like kind of rework myself.
Yeah.
And I did it. Right. But then even, you know, like that changes then too, where like, I didn't expect to get married, but here I am, I'm married. And like, you know, that album that I'm talking about that was made during that time, it's already out. It was recorded a year ago.
Yeah,
and now I'm like, I got to refigure myself out, you know, and who I am in the world. And like, but it's all informed by what came before. And you like learn or you lean on those lessons, you know? And I think that it like, it gives you a confidence too, that's hard to describe of like, I've been in this shit.
Right.
Yeah. This doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like the old person on the rocking chair kind of feel of like, yeah. There's nothing you could tell me that I haven't seen kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I had a moment like that earlier today with something where I can't really get into details, but like having an argument with somebody and just feeling kind of unthreatened about it, of like, yeah, what are you going to do?
Right.
Like, you know,
I'm going to go ahead and stab a guest. And my context is going to be, yeah, bands have dropped off my tours before. Did I guess right?
No. Oh. So I'm totally different. Okay. Different. But yeah.
Okay, yeah. I was going for it. Sorry.
but that's similar. You know, there is something in that I've been going through recently of like, yeah. It doesn't, no, I'm not stressed. It'll all work out.
You know, like. There is a nice ease to that. Like almost like a survivor kind of like,
yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, do you think you would be bored if you weren't forced to reinvent yourself so often?
Well, I think it's like playing the same note, right? You know, like over and over and over again. it's like, I guess really, I feel like I'm just trying to figure stuff out sometimes, you know, and then once you figure something out, like, and that's like the songwriting process too, you know, like of like, and why I oftentimes have like a hard time repeating myself. Or like if someone like is like, oh, I really like it when you do the songs about anarchy or the songs about being transgender. My immediate thing is like, well, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah.
I already talked about that. That's what I had to say about that. You know, like, so I don't know.
That was one thing from the Damber interview that I loved was he talked about this time in Chumbawamba's career where, you know, it was almost like a time of self-realization of like, you know, we've been espousing this kind of anarcho-punk so much and it's usually done with this kind of like almost like vitriol and anger. And he's like, we sat back one day and realized we're not angry people. And like that's not probably right for us. You know what I mean? Like that's not the delivery that we need at this point, you know? And yeah, I empathize with that because I feel kind of the same way, you know, like I'm as punk as they get, but I don't want to, I don't like when people are mean about it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Warren actually from Against Me used to talk about it pretty often, or he'd bring up where he's like, okay, well, we've clearly defined what we're against. What are we for?
Yeah.
But it's harder to like, sure. harder to like kind of verbalize that and harder to assert that. Maybe that's like, you know, trauma from being a kid or something like that. But
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, it takes a long time to get to gratefulness for a lot of us. Right.
And I have a hard time with that, you know, sometimes with shows, especially it's better with a band. It's totally different with a band. But when I get up by myself to play songs solo, I older songs where I yell or really scream, I'm like, I feel like I'm like having a tantrum on stage. And it's like, I'm not fucking like, I, you know, like that people, why am I yelling at everyone? You know, right, like right. I'm 43 years old. Why am I yelling?
Yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. Like,
it made more sense when I was younger for some reason, or like instinctively. And I don't know, like I'm trying to reconcile that in ways now. You know?
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. I mean, do you think like, will you actually like change the delivery of songs, like to make it feel the way you need it to feel?
No, it's like a perspective even of where the lyrics are coming from. Cause like, I don't want that to be interpreted as me saying like, I don't give a shit about the world, you know, or there's nothing I'm passionate about. It's just like your like justification as an individual for when you get up on stage as a teenager and scream and like go off on a bunch of things is much just more there naturally than it is when you're an adult, you know? And like when you're an adult, you're like, why am I doing this? Like, or what am I talking about? You know, that's, like you think about it.
Yeah, that's unique. And it's definitely part of being a songwriter. I think I empathize with at this point, because like, for me to play drums to a certain song for the 1,000th time, like, sure, I get bored sometimes. I could do it with, you know, with like one arm or something. But, you know, the idea that like no one's out in the audience being like, that drum beat saved my life. You know what I mean? Or like, or that, you know, there's not like that kind of weight on it. Like, and the idea that like something you write when you're like 17, you know, or something, and it's just, you're filled with piss and vinegar and this whole thing, and you can't minimalize it because someone out there might have literally like shaped part of their life based on this lyric or the delivery of that lyric. Like, that's kind of like a weird weight to carry in a, you know, for
100%. And I'll tell you, you know, like relating to this whole thing we're talking about, where I did this gig over the weekend for Dark Matter Coffee here in Chicago.
Okay.
And it's like at their big warehouse. And it's like, you know, they had like tattoo artists and vendors and food and like everything like that. So it wasn't, and it was like RSVP only and not advertised. So it wasn't people who knew who I was, who I am. Do you know who I am, Betty? No, it was, I didn't mean it like that. But like, it, like they didn't know who I they like had no idea of the music or anything like that. And it's a lot of families, right? And stuff. And so like you get up and you play those old punk songs in that context and you're like, I don't think I'm reaching these people. And if my intent was wanting to change the world, I don't think I'm doing that. Yeah. You know, like it's being lost on them because I'm angry and that's not the vibe, but I want to perform and I want to sing. But then after the show, at the end of the set, this person came up to me and they were like, hey, I want to show you this. And like, pulled up their like shirt sleeve and they had Vivida Vis tattooed on their wrist, which was like the name of the second Against Me demo tape that I recorded in 1998. Whoa. And I've been thinking about that moment since, where I'm like, you know, that's a lesson you learn of like, you don't fucking know what's going to happen. Yeah. And it doesn't matter how many records something sells or how big a song is. Cause I've maybe, you know, maybe sold fucking 500 copies of Vivida Vis, you know, if even, right?
Sure.
But that word is still resonating back to me fucking 25 plus years later, you know, like that made an impact somehow that is still reaching to me. So I cannot guess a song I write today, what that will happen in 25 years, that's what will happen with it in 25 years. And I don't want to discredit anything that could happen or like,
that's right.
You know, yeah. Lose hope in it.
Yeah. Like who knows what they can turn into. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. I heard like secondhand that I want to hear this before I lose you this time, because I heard a story about an A&R person during the creation of New Wave coming in with a lyrical suggestion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, several
like,
times.
Yeah,
several
like, times. Could you just lay this out for me, like how that played out? Because that's too... Well, I've had A&R people, you know, really get into like, you know, the volume of a guitar or like, you know, this and that. But I've never had somebody like that. And I want to know what happened.
Well, first of all, like without naming names, I do want to say that like I respect this A&R person, right? And there's someone who is no longer with us. And every time I go to Los Angeles, because that's where they were based, I'll like be in my hotel and I'll look out the window at the city and be like, it's not the same without this person in this city.
Oh, Laura, way to fuck up this fun story.
No, but that being said, you know, I mean, well, they were very critical of me. So like, you know, like they were the type of person who they could take criticism to, or they, you know, like okay. they dished it out or whatever.
Sure, sure.
But they came in and it was when we're with writing New Wave and it was with the song Born on the FM Waves of the Heart, which yeah. is the song that Tegan from Tegan and Sarah sure. like guests on. Yeah. And they're like, I don't know. I just hear in the chorus something like, I'm running, I'm jumping, I'm singing, I'm dancing. Like, and you know, in that moment, and I remember we're in the little like kitchenette area of the studio. Like, you know, my heart is like sinking into the bottom of my stomach.
Wait, I'm can like, you no. paint a little bit of a picture for me here? Because like, now, are we reading off like a notebook of like lyrics?
They're free flowing.
Oh, this is off the dome.
This off the off top the of the head, yeah. But they had, you know, they'd worked on it and maybe on the ride over because it was like the song they had heard it before and it like it wasn't vibing to them. And so it's
sure,
you know,
sure, sure.
the four of us, me, Andrew, James, and Warren, and the A&R person, and like and Butch and the studio engineer Billy, and you know. He's saying these lyrical suggestions. And again, like I'm just immediately going into panic mode and like about to cry almost because I like do not want someone fucking with my lyrics. And that was when Butch was immediately like, yeah, you know, like I forget what exactly he said, but yeah, I realized immediately like, oh, he's absorbing this. He's deflecting this.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
taking care of
he
it.
Knew
cool.
He knew the politics. He knew the politics. Yeah.
Yeah. And immediately after the A&R person was gone, he's like, and we're not doing that. You know?
Yeah. 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 I've always been fortunate to have Brian in our band for that because I'm terrible at that. You know, I'd be like, 5 seconds into that pitch being like, what the fuck are you talking about? And it would make the person feel bad and I'd probably blow the deal or something. He always understood like that better than I did, you know, let people get it out, you know?
Well, yeah. Like, it's easier too when you're older as well. You know, when you're
right.
younger,
yeah.
it's harder to take that yes. shit, any kind of suggestions yes. in the studio.
Yes. Yes.
But I've definitely even gotten to a point where lyrically, like, I don't know, like, I want to be open to everything and I want to hear every idea and I want to be willing to try everyone's idea, you know? So I don't want to put anything off limits.
I mean, are people still really tinkering with your lyrics?
No, I mean, like, you know, I've been making solo records recently, right?
You've kind of earned that, I'd say, at this point.
Right, but like entering into collaborating with everybody with the Mississippi Medical stuff with Matt and Mikey in Paris, you know, like I want to be open to that. Like I want to write music together. And
sure.
I don't know, you know?
Yeah, and you do now have a Phil Collins type drummer as well.
There you go, yeah.
Well, also one who can sing if you need him to, you know?
And he has been doing backing vocals.
Has he?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's awesome. I don't know. It's just something I was curious about. I don't know if it's a weird curveball this late in the interview, but you know, you came out in 2012, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like it's like 12 years after. That's like a real sizable timeline. You know, how many things have happened in your personal life, in the country, as far as, you know, like, you know, pre to post Trump and COVID and maybe now pre-Trump again, who the fuck knows? You know,
Jesus.
So now that you can see this all on like such a large timeline, I mean, is the not only the personal but the outside feeling of the movement, like, do you think it's where it should be? Is the direction still going in the right way or kind of the opposite? Like, what's your temperature of that on like a really broad scope, I guess?
Honestly, like, you know, I kind of got to a place where I'm like so mentally burnt out thinking about gender. That like, I just, I'm like, I can't even form thoughts about it. And it's been that way for a second. And I like, you know, all I can say is that like, it is not healthy to come out really publicly. I don't know if I didn't necessarily have a choice, but like to do it in the spotlight that like that, and to do even specifically like a lot of interviews about it. You know, I did like the Audible thing in over the pandemic. And I was like, when they pitched the idea to me, I was like, I want to call this the last interview, and I don't want to ever do an interview again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then they could talk to me out of it, and it's called Black Me Out, and it sucks, whatever, you know, but like my idea was good anyway. but so like, I don't know, you know, like it's been interesting in thinking about it in terms of like a movement and stuff, you know, like I've had a couple things happen recently in social, recently, like within the past couple of years in social media world, like in disagreeing with other trans people over trans things,
right?
Where
right.
I got that whiff of like, oh wait, this is like how the punk scene was in the early 20s,
right.
Where I was like, I want to remove myself from this,
right.
You know, like I have no time for this. I don't think that shit is productive.
What is it like? What came into the punk scene? What comes into that? Like, what is it that rears its ugly head? Is it like just this natural adaptation to start disagreeing with each other? Like,
it's nuance, right. And there being no room for nuance online, what it is. It's nuance to the conversation and critical thinking and like open discussion. And there's not room for that in an online forum.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that has a lot to do with it, but you know, also it's like different generations of queer people, people who've had different experiences and like, but all, you know, then granted, like we're just living through a really fucking stressful time, you know? And like, also like the things that social media does to your brain is like grotesque, you know, like, and fucks you up and like creates weird dynamics. And I don't know, you know, like it's something that like, I know who I am, you know, like, and I feel fine with myself and I'm just like focused on what's good for me in the present day. And I like need a break from that discussion in a lot of ways. I feel
is it kind of like the gatekeeper stuff in punk? Like eventually there becomes an exact way you're supposed to be, or supposed to be responding and, or supposed to be acting. Like, is it like a set of rules almost come into place?
Sure. Yeah. And, or like, you know, even like the title of my book is a great example of that, you know, the word tranny, right? Where there's like an older generation of trans people who are like, identify with that word and have owned it, reclaimed it or whatever. Right. You know?
Right.
And then there's a younger generation that thinks it's abhorrent.
They wouldn't go near that word. Right.
Right. And don't think it's cool that I titled my book that. Like, there was even like, you know, there was that book that came out not too long after mine called Detransition Baby, that like in that book, they take a swipe at me. And like call me an edgelord for calling my book tranny, you know?
Okay.
And it's like, that's another genderqueer person taking a swipe at a genderqueer person, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and it's that same shit in punk where it's like, you don't fucking know me, you know? Like, and like, I don't fucking know you, and I'm not going to do this shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and then and also, you know, like honestly, then too, kind of getting to a place where I took the approach I took to coming out because I had to, you know, like, and it was like a survival instinct thing in a lot of ways.
Wait, when you say you had to do it publicly, that was just because you're fronting like a very big band at the time and there's no way to do it privately?
Well, yeah. And even because like leading up to it, like I was experimenting with certain things without saying anything and people were making fun of me. Like I have a friend who told me I looked terrible with long hair and I needed to cut it.
I see.
And like, if I put on eyeliner, people would be like, oh, guyliner, you know, like, and like really subtly, actually homophobic things, you know, like that I realized like, well, if I just come out, you're not going to have that same attitude towards it, even if you think I look bad, you know, like,
at least
you'll just shut the fuck up, right?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But
gives you an opportunity, I guess, to own it more.
Yeah. But then at the same time, like, you know, X amount of years later, like I don't know. There is a part of me that's just like, I just want to focus on the music, you know, like right. I would like to get it back to that. And if also, if that's something that kind of fucked up against me in ways, you know, if anyone else and against me felt like it became too much about that, maybe that's valid, you know, like, and maybe it like, it needs to get away from that, from me and my gender identity, you know, and just be about the music. So I don't know. It's tough. And it's weird because like, it's put me kind of into this box when it comes to promoting records, I feel like now. Of like, people always want to give me that happy ending, you know, and now even more so, like, I got married, fuck, happy ending, see you later, Laura Jane Grace, we do not want to hear from you anymore, you know, like, why are you making another record? Justify it. Like, that's how I feel. Like, I don't want to have to justify why the fuck I'm making a record.
Right.
Like, I'm going to make another one and another one and another one until I die, hopefully.
Right,
you know, like,
right.
But the byline for making records is always something like, their most personal record yet, you know, or like something like that, or like, where, you know, where do you go from there? It's like, how do you reset that? Or like,
yeah,
you know, I don't identify with that.
Now it's my new most personal record yet. You thought the last one was personal. Well, check this out.
I'm waking up next to you in bed, smell my morning breath. Yeah. You know,
like, this is how the album is delivered to your home personally with a cup of coffee. Yeah.
You know,
it's so strange, the process of it. But I hope, like, the one thing, if I can offer a silver lining, is that I think when a movement of any kind, and you know, I don't mean to minimize it by comparing it to like the punk movement or something, because it's like, you know, people's lives we're talking about. But, you know, where something goes on for so long and becomes so well known and widespread, that nuance is even necessary, you know? And like I feel like at this point, maybe that, even though I'm sure fucking annoying and it's gonna take like a bizarre reset of like one generation disagreeing with another generation for maybe the next generation to have a real better idea about how to, you know, actualize this for ourselves in the most positive way. Like, I think it's actually part of a positive process, even though you're caught up probably in some of the largest like crosshairs of that process, you know?
Sure. I recognize that. Yeah.
So, you know, like, hopefully it's still, I just hope you think it's still moving in the right direction. That's like the thing that,
Well, I mean, it's hard to, it's like, we'll see what happens in November, right? Like there is a bigger, like, what direction are we moving in picture that, like, kind of dictates all of that, even,
know.
You know, like,
know.
Or what, like, it almost feels like we're all in this weird mental holding pattern.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And kind of numb to things, you know?
That's right. Yeah. Some bizarre fallout to, like, everything from 2016 to like post pandemic, I feel like we're all sort of just figuring out not only what we are again, but what like everything is, you know?
It's like and that's another thing that like the lesson taught you with age, you know, and the perspective on that is that like things are going to change.
Yeah.
They're going to keep changing, you know, like, I don't know.
I wish we had some old person acid reflux safe drink to toast to that right now. let us scoop a couple, some oatmeal together. All right. Well, this was fun. I don't want to keep you too long. I do know you're a voracious reader.
I am.
And I was hoping you could recommend maybe, and this is even for me, like, what's the newest piece of fiction and nonfiction that you could recommend at this point?
Well, what I'm reading currently is The Creative Act, A Way of Being by Rick Rubin.
Oh,
and,
yeah, yeah.
Really enjoying that. That's really good. And hold on.
You got a stack? You got to look through a stack?
I'm in the room that has all my books, and I keep like the ones that I've read this year stacked. So this year I've read book 4 by Aleister Crowley, and I've read Hallelujah Anyway, Rediscovering Mercy by Anne Lamott, and then All About Love by Bell Hooks. I highly recommend that. That's really great. And then I've read The Three Magical Books of Solomon by Aleister Crowley, SL McGregor Mathers and FC Coney Bear, whoever the fuck.
I always see the stack. Sometimes when I see your stacks of books on Instagram, I'm like, you know, every once in a while, you should take in a little fluff. You know what I mean? You only read heavy fucking books.
It's the only thing that keeps my attention. Yeah. I don't know. But I'm like, I have a book addiction. I like owning books and I want to be like surrounded by books as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And part of it is like a sound absorption deflection thing like books are cheap and they like really suck up a lot of sound. So I just want like wall to wall books where I live.
Oh, you know, it'd be tight if you could collect so many books that you had the sliding ladder bookshelf.
Oh, hell yeah. And also like a hidden room behind a bookshelf.
Right. Like you pull one of the books back.
Yep.
What would be in the hidden room?
I don't know. More books.
No. What do we mean? I'm thinking for you. I'm thinking crushed velvet, lava lamps, and like a very expensive bong or something. Like, you know.
See, I'm not a lava lamp person because I see a lava lamp on and all I think is, fucking electricity bill, man.
That's true. They can't be using much. They move so slowly. It's just a light. No, it's true. It's true. Your punk rock guilt can't even give you a crushed velvet secret room. One day. All right. Well, Laura, thanks for coming on and chatting.
My pleasure. It's always good talking with you. And I hope to see you in person sometime soon, Benny.
Yeah.
Smoke a J.
You too.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ah, boy.
Oh, yeah.
That's the fourth appearance of Laura on
number four. Number five, she gets the gold jacket. Yes. Even though we haven't given a gold jacket yet, you know? I think we got to get on this.
Gold lame.
Come on, Brad, produce some
gold
coats.
Gold lame.
Good talk.
Yeah.
You know, it was nice to get, it's always something, I never want to like fanboy Laura too hard, you know, when it comes to Against Me. A very important band for me, you know. Yeah. The band I go back to a lot, really brought me through some interesting times, some songs that like are real hair-raising songs for me, you know, songs that give me the goosey bumps or songs that lift like the hair on my arm, you know, things that connect with me. Every time in Europe, I sing Americans Abroad. So when I ask these questions, it's as a genuine fan, you know, right. And like, you know, you know, I'm out there in the industry. I'm hearing things. And then it was nice to get kind of Laura's side of the story here. What's going on? And who knows? You know, it's a complicated thing being in a band.
Absolutely.
Long relationships over a long period of time, and it takes a lot of waves sometimes. And, you know, I hope this one can ride the wave somewhere cool in the end, because it's just a band I really care for and would love to see more from. But we'll see. But Hole in the Head is a great great thing in the meantime.
Yeah.
And if it's more Laura coming, I'll listen to it. But this is a solid record. Really cool tones. Got this nice, like, lo-fi kind of proper old school punk thing going on at times. I really enjoy it. And always lyrically, like, you know, Laura's going to take you on a journey. You know, something I was looking at in my notes here that we didn't get to, which is maybe good. I don't know how much Laura would have given on this, but her first actual show was singing Bohemian Rhapsody a cappella at a church group.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't believe I didn't get to that one. Maybe. Well, that'll be for number five.
That is a video that I would like to see.
I know. You think there's... This is the problem with growing up in the 90s, you know? We just did stuff. And, you know, maybe someone showed up with a camera, but not often. And if they did, everyone was posing. And it was a different story back then. I was literally just explaining to my kid, like, about a rotary phone and the fact that someone had to answer and then ask for someone, and then you had to go get them. And such a common thing that's such a foreign concept now, you know?
I predicted in, you know, 100 years, that time period before, like, good camera phones will be PD, before documented. Pre-documented.
You think, yeah.
PD.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right.
Because everything since then has been documented over and over and over. You can't get away with anything.
Pretty crazy to think how much people could get away with back then. I mean, shit.
I did.
Yeah. I mean, dude, like, but I'm even talking like pre-80s. You know, just think, like, seriously think how easy it was to get away with anything. Yeah. Before, like, the year 1900.
Yeah.
You could do anything. If you just had evil, and maybe this is why religion was so important back then.
Yes,
because if you just had evil intentions in general, you could do whatever you wanted. Who was going to catch you? Yeah. Unless you were literally caught in the act by, like, six people with blood on your hand and, like, a weapon in your hand. No one knew. You just rove from place to place. Oh, man. Imagine, like, what the Old West was filled with. Just people who murdered mad people somewhere else.
Just scumbags.
You know? All you had to do was leave. That's all you had to do. Get away with it. Just leave.
Yeah.
Man. What a time. I gotta be honest, I'm not gonna be one of those people who's like, oh, what a time. Because with my personality and sensibility, I probably wouldn't have made it long.
Oh, no way. Yeah. Like the Old West? No way.
Killed. In a flash.
Yeah.
Yeah. Laura might have done well.
She might have.
Yeah. Survivor.
You know, I gotta offer up speaking of documentaries, you know, we were talking about Descendants show recently that we both saw. Have you seen the documentary?
What about
the Descendants?
Oh, no. No.
It came out fairly recently. I highly recommend it.
I haven't.
It's almost split between like Descendants and All, and it's like, it's a great... There's definitely stuff that I didn't know.
Really?
Or at least not fully, like kind of the whole story. It's a really sweet doc. Like,
so it's new. It's not Filmage, the one that came out
Filmage,
in 13?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. This came out a while ago.
Did?
Yeah.
I thought it just came out.
Maybe it was like re-released on something.
Oh, maybe. Because somebody sent it to me.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, it's awesome.
All right. Well, everybody else is
Watch Filmage, though, for sure. Yeah, that's awesome.
And watch you know, Laura Jane Grace has got her own socials. Laura Jane Grace against me. Is that against me? Check it out. Check out that new record for sure. Because
yeah, badass. It's great.
The video is pretty funny. I like the video.
Yeah, it is good.
And we are all at Going Off Track on all media and Patreon.
What about our Patreon? What happens on there, bro?
/ Going Off Track, where, you know, we post some videos about Benny's recent tour. Sometimes some funny pictures. We get together with the patrons on the Discord every Thursday night when possible. And discuss great events of the day.
That's right. And I think Karina is going to be pretty happy about the burgeoning goose love.
Yeah.
Because I think she was feeling pretty guilty about the goose, you know?
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Yeah, I get the impression. So don't worry about it. Listen, it's like when someone's watching on TV, watching sports at home, and you get up to take a piss and your team loses. You're like, oh, it's my fault. Karina, it's not your fault. It's not my fault. It's nobody's fault. This is the universe working and spinning. And it, you know what? It was that time for the goose to cross to the other side. And we'll see it all soon. You know, it's no big deal. But burgeoning goose love. I think that might be onto something for the name of Laura's next record. Missed a chance, maybe. All right, let's get out of here.
All right, goodbye.
Bye. Take it easy, Brad. Love you. Me too.